You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified. Today on our show, we're talking with Jack Garrity. He is the director of the Pasita Abad Art Estate. Jack, thanks so much for being with us today.
It's great to be here, Brainerd.
To begin with, let's talk a little bit about Pasita Abad, quite an extraordinary artist. I know the estate must be, the art estate must be quite a lot to manage, but let's talk a little bit about her impact and what she's done.
Yeah, Pasita was a unique artist. Unfortunately, she died at the early age of 58, about 11 and a half years ago. And she's fairly well known in different parts of Asia, in particular in some parts of the U.S. But she was a very prolific painter, and a painter that went out to the fields. And when I mean the fields, she was in the jungles of Papua New Guinea, she was in southern Sudan, she was in the streets of Dominican Republic, and in the rice paddies in Bangladesh, up in refugee camps in Thailand. And so she was one who really liked to get out and be with the people. And what she did, which was one of the things that was unique, is that she incorporated a lot of textiles and fabric and other types of found objects from these countries and incorporated them into her paintings. Initially, she focused for the first 7 years on social realism work, figurative, and that culminated with the big series she did on immigrants, the American Dream series that she did in the U.S., which was shown in the National Women's Museum in 1994. But by spending so much time in developing countries, she also got an appreciation of local cultures, and that could be masks, textiles, the shadow puppets in Indonesia. And so she began to do a series which she called Masks and Spirits, and based on her experiences in these places. For example, in Papua New Guinea, she would incorporate the cowrie shells and sew them on to her canvases. And that led to a different type of mixed media canvas that she did. And she actually sewed them. She called this trapunto painting, where she would sew the paintings, stuff them, and then go over the paintings again, and then add applique, collage, different types of materials, until she got the desired effect. And it gave it a three-dimensional effect, which she really craved, because she hated flat paintings. And the other thing about her is her work was extremely colorful. She always had color. I always equated it to a singer. There are many, many singers, but only a few singers really have a voice. And it's the same with painters and color. And Pasita had color right from the beginning. Matter of fact, when she was in art school at the Art Student League in the middle of winter, they were doing still lifes, and everybody's doing the grays and blues. And she was doing fuchsias and oranges and lime greens. And the professor said, "Where's this coming from?" And she said, "This is what I see in my head." So she was always had color, always had color.
It sounded like her career really started to take off at a point when she began making these three-dimensional works. Is that correct? Is that a point where not only she was finding, in a sense, as you're saying, her voice, but also began reaching out more to the global community?
Yes. I mean, this was a unique type of work. If you could compare it in the States, would be like Faith Ringgold's type of quilted or Miriam Shapiro's work, but with a different, a completely different subject matter. And that began to attract notice. And so she was involved with many international shows all over the world. But in total, I think, her work was exhibited in about 200 galleries and museums and in other spaces around the world during her 32-year career. Mm. And unfortunately, in 2001, she discovered she had lung cancer, even though she didn't smoke. And it concerned her and bothered her and so forth. But she focused on her work. She just went into her studio. And over the three-year period from the time that she was operated on till the time she died, she did over 1,000 paintings.
Let's talk about her project in Singapore, the Art Bridge, which is really a kind of very large undertaking, a public work. How did that develop? And that seems to have enormous impact.
Well, Pasita always believed that art was for everyone, and she really felt that art should not just belong in galleries and museums. She really believed in public art. And she had been involved with a number of public art projects before, most notably in Washington. She hung, you know, six large paintings in the metro center of the subway station, massed from six continents to reflect the diversity in Washington. But this bridge was bigger than even she could have imagined. And it all happened by a whim. She was doing a print internship at the Singapore Tyler Print Institute in Singapore. And every day they take a coffee break and they go out, and this bridge was located very near the coffee shop. And she's looking at the bridge, and she said to one of the people, she said, you know, this is a beautiful bridge, but nobody looks at it because it's just painted battleship gray. I could make this bridge dance. And they all laughed, and they said, yeah, that'd be great, but this is Singapore. That will never happen. And she said, well, if Singapore wants to be a city for the arts, they'll let me do it. And so they said, well, let's pursue it. And lo and behold, after 9 months, they gave her permission to do it.
Now that's kind of extraordinary, but also maybe a testament to her persuasive powers. I mean, how does that happen? That does sound
determination.
Like
determination. And she just was always pushing the edge all the time. And anyway, so she had done a nice outline and of how the bridge was going to be painted with circles and colors and so forth. And so she brought it to the team of painters, and they said, that's great, but where are the detailed plans? And she said, what do you mean? Here they are. And they said, we can't work from that. And so she really had to go scrambling, and she came across the idea of laying it out on a computer, like a virtual bridge. But it means that, you know, she had to sit there and color code every part of the bridge and every one of the 2,350 circles that were on it. But what was more extraordinary is that this was in the final months of her life, and she was going down to the hospital every morning for full brain radiation treatments, and then going to the bridge to oversee and to paint the bridge. And her doctor had told her, look, Pasita, you can't get on any ladders. You've got to promise me, because, you know, if you could fall. And she said, okay. And then she went up in a rope harness and had a picture taken and said to the doctor, no ladder, doctor. And that was Pasita.
So really an amazing spirit right up to the
right to the end. To the end.
And were there other large-scale projects like that, or was that the very biggest one?
That was by far the biggest. I mean, that was the pedestrian bridge. It spans the Singapore River, and it's a major undertaking.
And are there murals in other places? You said in the subway she did some murals?
That hung for 3 years, and so it's not there now. But we have documentation for that. And then her doctor requested that after she died, that a collage of her paintings be put on the walls of the hospital. And he did that. And he actually has a very interesting talk at the end. He said, this mural was painted by Pasita while she was undergoing treatment for advanced lung cancer. As a testament to her courage and perseverance during the final months of the fight with cancer, she undertook the painting of the Alcalf Bridge. Such was her dedication that after morning radiotherapy sessions, she would go back to the river, working out of the blazing afternoon sun, wielding her brush and paints, even when she could no longer walk unaided. Her zest for life, despite adversity, was inspirational, and her oncologist, Professor John Wong, recalls how Pasita continued to sip champagne and charged that no tears be shed when her paintbrush was finally laid to rest. That was her spirit.
Yeah, extraordinary, really. But very inspiring to so many people.
Yeah, and she was also very inspiring to a lot of kids. She gave, you know, countless workshops to students, and she always wanted to give them the opportunity because she grew up on a very remote island, and they never had any art classes. Mm. And one of the legacies of the foundation that was established on the island is that they've now been giving art classes to students in the island, and a number of them now have become artists and are showing work. Mm. So she'd be very happy about that.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit about the Pasita Abad art estate and you directing it. What is its mission now, and what are you involved in?
Well, just before she died, she said to me, she said, "I know I'm going to die, but you have to make sure my paintings live." And that with that, I had to go out and establish the estate. And one of the things is to preserve her work. Second is to promote her legacy through publications, through online, through exhibitions, and then also to try to make more people in the world, and not just in Asia, America, but everywhere, more aware of the work that she did. And hopefully that will inspire a number of them, and many of them will appreciate the work.
And is there a continued reception for her? Are you talking to more people about that, or what is...
Yeah, we continue to talk. We're doing more online. We're getting her paintings into the auctions in Hong Kong. And the reception, you know, it always goes slower than you want, but we're making positive steps. Mm.
Well, for any artist, it's a lot to have their work continue after their life, and she was certainly an extraordinary artist that had a big impact, and that's something that will last with bridges like the Singapore Bridge, and in a sense, all the bridges that she made with the children that you're talking about, the classes go on, and her paintings are there. Is there a place where people can contact you if they're interested in her paintings?
Yeah, we have the website, pasitaabad.com. We're also in the process of putting 500 images on Art Store, which provides images for schools, universities, and nonprofits, so they can use, whether it be for publications or papers or research or whatever. So, in that way, we're trying to make the images as available as possible to people.
Yeah, because it seems that it they lend themselves to... there's so much color that they lend themselves to public work, really, right? That the public should see these because they're exciting. They're full of life. They're
That's
invigorating.
Right.
They're inspiring to people.
And that was really just a reflection of her, you know, her personality and her drive.
In terms of the public understanding a little more about Pasita, is there anything that the public can do or you would like people to do in terms of helping to share her legacy or anything like that?
Well, there's nothing, you know, specific. We've published about 11 books about her work, but they've been mainly focused on particular series. Right now we're working on a more comprehensive book that will look at all of her social realism work, and how it built and how it came about. And then we've got a couple of other series that we're going to be looking at as well. One of the very unique series, and I've never seen another artist do this, is that, you know, even though she grew up on an island, she didn't know how to swim. And so only when she came to the States did she go to the YWCA and learned how to swim. And then when we went back to Asia, she became a scuba diver, and she did over 80 dives, and she was just enthralled by the beauty of the underwater life. And so she made these massive paintings, these have been shown and collected by a number of museums, and would like to do a book to document document that as well.
Well, Jack, it's great that you're doing this work. Obviously, it's a labor of love, but it's also a great service, because this is what an artist needs, to have their work promoted, shared endlessly, even beyond their life. So great work.
You feel like the work has just begun. There's so much to be done, but we're fortunate that we're able to look after her work and try to enhance her legacy. So that's, we're happy that we're able to do that.
Jack, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thanks a lot, Brandon.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.